The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Good evening and welcome to the Black Talk Radio Network, home of this show, Race Treaty. My name is Stephanie Franklin, also known as Ifa Tayo, Iwinye Mi, Adejo K. And I am your guest host this evening. I would like to thank Robin Jerome Benton, creator of the show Race Treaty, and Scotty Reed, producer of the show, and Onaji Muiz for inviting me to guest host this evening. The Race Treaty Show was created to give space to voices of the community during the International Decade for People of African Descent, to discuss human rights, United Nations International Convention, and white supremacy. Tonight, we will discuss and explore culture as a human right, cultural genocide, and reparations in the context of the International Decade for People of African Descent. Joining us tonight in this conversation are three panelists who view culture and recognition as critical to African people's empowerment, development, and identity. Please welcome the following guests: Navasha Dea, who serves Baltimore, Maryland as co-founder and director of the Healing and Performing Arts of the Youth Resiliency Institute. She is also a professional performing and recording artist and a certified holistic wellness practitioner. Let's also welcome Ann Chen, who founded the Middle Passage Ceremonies and Port Markers Project in 2011 to repair the broken circle that traditionally bound living and future generations to African ancestors. This connection was broken as a direct result of the transatlantic human trade. The project is a culmination of Anne's life, interest in history, family, community, culture, and art. And last, we will have joining us Babalawo Ifashola Iwintola Adeosun. He is a practicing priest of Ifa and Osala, or you may know the Orisha as Orishinla or Obatala in Baltimore, Maryland, and has been a West African dancer and drummer for 30 years and a visual and performing artist for over 40 years. He is also the owner of Shola Architectural Coding and Design. Welcome, all three of you.
So before we begin,
thank you. So before we begin getting into questions and conversations with our panelists, I'd like to provide you with the context and the basis of this show. So it is my perspective that culture is a foundation of a people's identity. Yes. Without culture, we are lost and have no ties and bindings to our heritage, our history, our lineage, and future. Yes. It guides, protects, and binds us to our ancestors and provides a roadmap for our future. So, again, you know, there are key, I think, terms that need to be defined before we just start this conversation. Again, as background and context for our discussion tonight. So the first question is, what is the United Nations? So the United Nations is an international organization founded in 1945 after World War II in an attempt to maintain international peace and security and to achieve cooperation among nations on economic, social, and humanitarian problems. The United Nations is currently made up of 193 member states, which means countries. And the mission and work of the UN are guided by the purposes and principles contained in its founding charter. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a declaration made by the UN body, was proclaimed by the UN General Assembly on December 10, 1948, and sets out the fundamental human rights to be universally protected. So what are human rights? Human rights are rights that we have by just the sheer virtue of us being human beings. It is the fact that we are able to bring that there are certain inalienable rights that we have as individuals. So we need to talk about the U.S. in conjunction with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and being a member of the United Nations. So the U.S. is one of the few countries around the world that has ratified the least number of treaties. The U.S. has ratified very few treaties. It's ratified the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the International Covenant on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the International Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. And again, I want to repeat, the U.S. touts itself as a leader of humanitarian efforts and human rights in the world, but yet out of all of the nearly 200 member states of the United Nations, they have been one of the nations that have ratified the fewest treaties. So in saying that, I want to get into a little bit about the Convention on Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. Genocide is defined by the Genocide Treaty as a means of any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, we're getting background noise. If you could put your phones on mute, that would be helpful. Again, genocide is a means of any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial or religious group, such as killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And I'm only reading you part of the Genocide Convention. And now I want to move to the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Treaty, which has not been signed by the U.S. And I want to read to you Article 1. And Article 1 states that all people have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. And part of the preamble to the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Treaty, it states that realizing that the individual having duties to other individuals and to the community to which he or she belongs is under a responsibility to strive for the promotion and observance of the rights recognized in the present covenant. So I say all of that because I want to talk about culture tonight. I want to talk about cultural genocide in the context of the International Decade for People of African Descent and how we need to be looking at and broadening our concept and discussion of what reparations is. Now, I do understand that this conversation regarding reparatory justice has been occurring for many, many years, and we have such intellectual genius within the African community that we've already began to define reparations in a much broader space than just 40 acres and a mule.
But I say that again to set the basis on this conversation that we are having tonight, and that is culture as a human right. So as I indicated, or you've heard before on previous radio shows, that the Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent visited the United States of America January 19th through the 29th. When they came here, they came for a fact-finding mission to determine what is the state of human rights for Black people in this country. They selected five countries to visit. Those five countries were Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, Jackson, Mississippi, Chicago, Illinois, and New York, New York. And having said that, they issued and they released preliminary recommendations that will feed their larger final report that will be disclosed in September of this year before the Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland at the United Nations. So as you are aware, January 1st, 2015 marked the beginning of the next 10 years of the International Decade for People of African Descent, as declared by the United Nations. And in doing that, it ends on December 31st, 2024. The theme of the decade is recognition, justice, and development. So, with all of that being said, I want to lead into the conversation that I have with my guest this evening. This conversation is based on these individuals doing advocacy for our people, our ancestors, for years. And again, they were part of, either they or their organization was represented at the Baltimore visit by the Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent that was organized by the Franklin Law Group, which is the firm that I'm the president and CEO of. And the national visit was coordinated by the U.S. Human Rights Network under the leadership of Asian DK and her staff. So having said that, I want to open up and I want to first ask Navasha. Navasha, tell us, please, a little bit about the work you do and how you define culture.
Okay. Well, the Youth Resilience Institute was co-founded in 2010 by myself, Fanon, and two youth mentees, and we provide culturally relevant rites of passage process, mentoring, training, and an array of human and character development services to children, youth, and adults, with the aim of creating civically engaged cross-generational teams of community-based advocates and leaders who work towards forming a healthier and safer, stronger community in Baltimore City. So we also have many programs in our organization. We have Youth Kwanzaa Collective is an asset-based youth-led campaign that promotes racial equity, strong cultural identity, and family and community year-long events through the Nguzo Saba and Heshima Respect. We also have a program called Baltimore Guitars Against Violence, which provides children and youth ages 8 to 18 living in communities with high rates of violence with an opportunity to learn how to play guitar. We have many programs in our organization that really help to help the families and children realize their authentic self. And I don't know what else I have to share about our organization, but we provide programming in disinvested communities as well. And
okay, so
culture.
Mm-hmm. No, continue.
It's fine. Okay. So as John Henry Clark said, history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. So culture is the pulse of a people as they create history that is a clock. So culture is very, very, very important, and it tells what is happening with that person. And it also culture as it relates to our heritage, because we have social culture and we have heritage culture, really gives you a framework to give you confidence and a foundation for your life.
Okay, you said a mouthful, which I want to talk about a little bit.
No, I think it's great, Navasha. I really think it's great. So I want to dig a little further in a number of the great things that you shared with all of us today. So it connects with the question that I have for you and I have for everybody on this panel. So I'm asking Anne and Baba Ifashola to think about this question. You talked about having a strong cultural identity. You talked about people being able to realize their authentic self. So in saying that, I want to ask you, what is the importance of maintaining and supporting our Africanity as you move through the various things you do with your organization?
Well, African culture is the foundation of all culture in the world and holds the key to the ancient memory of our humanity. And humanity cannot sprout the brilliance and solutions for our current times without that cultural base and framework. So it's very important. I mean, we can't move forward in our work if we do not know where we're coming from. So, you know, that's Sankofa, reaching back to move forward. So in our work, when you have that strong framework and you know where you're from, you can move forward in confidence and a groundedness that is needed to really forward through this interesting time we're in with all this commotion, injustice, and racism.
Okay. Okay. And having said that, based on what you said about moving forward in confidence and having a strong rooting or, you know, a strong cultural identity, I want to go to you next, Baba. I want to ask you, based on what Navasha said, is your definition of culture the same? If not, how would you define it? And what do you think is the importance of specifically the ability and the right to practice an indigenous African spiritual practice?
Thank you very much. What Navasha said is very correct. And there's so many ways to look at the tree of that particular issue. It does have many branches, definitely. We know that if a man, a woman, a family does not have a foundation of from whence they come, where they are, and where they're going, there's nothing but confusion. We know that in this experience of us being in this hemisphere, that basically we are in a situation where we are being defined clearly by someone else's wishes, designs, and makeup. Henceforth, they have made us into their image of what they want us to be, how they want us to be, how they want us to think, act, function, etc. And to our detriment, we have seen throughout our time in this hemisphere, in this situation, where we have just, as we have moved, we're moving further and further away from our source, which is our Africanness self, we see a deterioration. We see a total breakdown of our family structures, of our social structures, of our spiritual structures and economic structures as well. So now we have seen that these situations that have once again circled around to impact us are really looking at destroying us. So therefore, it is inherent upon us to seek a higher ground, which is culture. Because culture will give us a greater foundation, a greater ability to be able to stand tall and to maintain self, especially with self with the earth, with the greater creator force.
Okay, thank you, Baba. You said a mouthful too. So I want to build on something that you said, and then I want to connect this bridge to Anne's work. So yes. You talk very clearly about culture and that it is the basis and the foundation of where we are and where we are going and where we have been. And so I want to talk this, I'm going to say football. Did I say it right? I'm not a sports person, but I'm going to punt this football over to Anne, because Anne addresses where we have been. So Anne, can you tell us a little bit about the Middle Passage Ceremonies and Port Marcus Project, why you started the project, and the importance of the project. Anne? Hello, do we lose Anne?
Anne is still on the line. She may have muted herself, but I'm showing everyone's line is open.
Yes.
Okay, I'm back. I'm just technologically challenged.
Okay, no problem, Anne. Did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. First of all, thank you. The project was established, as we said, in 2011 to commemorate what are basically the ancestors, African ancestors, who arrived in this land, as well as the 2 million who died during the Middle Passage. We've walked away from most of that history and those ancestors. In terms of a traditional African practice, we have severed ties. We have pulled the navel out of us. We're free floating in many ways. So that what we decided, after trying to figure out what would be most appropriate, we identified the 42 places in the United States where Africans first arrived. And from that point, the culture was not all lost. I think that that's the one thing that I would like to stress. They could not have survived if they didn't have the foundation. We have carried that. We carried that in their in our DNA. We carried that in what are adaptions to having lived under the historical experience. And I think that we need to celebrate our ancestors. We also need to figure out a way, a means, to begin to connect ourselves to that. In very real ways, tangible, for anyone and everyone to see. So that the ceremony are part of that, the installation of markers at these 42 sites is another means. We're talking about placing value on who we are, who our ancestors are. That is something that was lost in some ways. But I don't think that any of us as part of this program would be here today if there wasn't strength, if there wasn't a culture. You know, one of the comments that was made in St. Augustine at a ceremony was that we have to open our eyes. We have to open our hearts and understand where we came from. Because if we don't, as both of the guests have said, it's just mass confusion. We've lost. We will lose our way.
Yes.
And I think that we are, as people of African descent in this land, in this hemisphere, we've been the canary in the coal mine. We've identified those things that are wrong, dangerous, harmful. And we've always been a bellwether from the beginning. And that's the other thing that this project stresses, is that you can't look at any place in the Western Hemisphere and define it as exclusively European. Africans came from the beginning, and they have created what we're looking at today, good and bad.
Yes.
And it's time for, I think, everybody to take a serious look at who we want to be, who we should be. And it's not an easy thing to do because it means sacrifice. It means valuing your future, particularly your children, which we're not doing. I mean, our kids are not being educated. We have communities that are falling apart, that are sick. We have old people who are not being cared for. Mm. And as long as we have just this level of capitalism, you know, it's not only people doing it to us. We're doing it to ourselves.
Ourselves, exactly. Yes.
And so we have to figure out. Yeah.
I want to follow up on a lot of what you said, because you are really, you know, you're really giving us good stuff here right now. I want to ask you a question. What would you say to a 12-year-old that would approach you and said, why is your work relevant? Why is it relevant? Here we are in the 21st century, and we have people of African descent around the world popping in a very negative form every political, economic, social, and cultural issue around the world. Around the world, we are the most impoverished people. And we're also, specifically, our African women and children are the poorest, the least educated, has the highest health issues, are African women. When I say African, I'm talking about Black women in the United States, throughout the diaspora, and on the continent of Africa. What would you say to a young person who asks you, again, the relevance of your work, that when they look at everything that is African, it is completely negative and not supporting and self-sustaining, and that they don't want to identify with their culture? Hence, we see fake hair, you know, we see a number of, you know, plastic surgical interventions or operations to change our look. We're bleaching our skin. What would you say to a young person that is living in this reality today about the relevance of your project and why it is important?
Well, I would say, first of all, you know, if you don't know who you are, if you don't have a sense of value personally and as a community, then, you know, you're going to accept that all the negatives are almost deserved. And I think that we have to stop. We have to just tell that 12-year-old, you know, what do you know about your family? What do you know about yourself? And what do you expect in terms of your future? What do you want? What's important to you? I mean, that's a lot to ask a 12-year-old, I understand. But part of this project is saying that these things are meaningful. You know, we go into communities to ask them and encourage them to hold the remembrance ceremony, to recognize their ancestors and their history, and to make this a public point of knowledge for each one of these communities. It changes the way those people who live in that community begin to view themselves and their history. But if all we're going to show are the negative examples, you know, if we're only going to show people and items that are beautiful, you know, the Black is beautiful thing that occurred in the 60s and 70s has merit, you know, and it's disappeared in a lot of ways. But there are also a lot of kids. There are a lot of kids that are still around. I mean, you know, Black Lives Matter didn't just come from nowhere. It is a statement, and I think that we need to say that. Black Lives Matter. But we have to believe it. You know, I don't, I think we give voice to these things, but we don't act upon it.
There's no action. Exactly.
Well, let me pull Navasha into this conversation, because, you talk about Black Lives Matter, and clearly all three of you in the work, that you're doing in the world, and I would say your personal commitment to who we are as people
and maintaining who we are and our cultural traditions, you're clearly saying that we matter. I want to ask Navasha, does she see, and I want all of you to think about this question, does she see the importance of culture as a human right? Or is it some tangential, intangible concept or thought that you think cannot be realized?
That's a good question.
That's a great question, yes.
It is a human right. Unfortunately, you know, dominant culture, I mean, it's a human right. And we have been far too long been bamboozled into the mythology of this, you know, prominent dominant culture or European culture being the most prolific culture that people aspire to. While in my experiences, there have been a lot of European white-bodied people who admire African-American culture and African culture and definitely Native American indigenous culture and Hawaiian indigenous culture. And so there's something there in regards to the great, you know, experience of bullying around the world. When people are bullied and they take over things, something that's at the heart that's not settled. And I spoke to a friend of mine. She's white-bodied. She's Irish. And I was doing some work with women in Colorado. And this is how she became my friend. She said that, you know, basically Europeans lost connection with the earth and therefore felt insecure and started going over and taking over other places. This is a white body sister. And she said, I'm Irish. We're the low on the totem pole with Europeans. But she understood that. And she said, when you lose your connection to Mother Earth, you start getting out of balance and therefore doing crazy things. So even European culture is important to go return to as it relates to the earth-based, nature-based culture to bring a certain balance. So, if you have, you know, so when you have this bamboozlement that happens where you are tricked to think that something that is one of the younger cultures of the world is better than your culture, which is older, that's something to say about. That's a huge campaign. You're talking about campaigns and PR firms. That's a huge campaign that's happened for hundreds of years on this earth, right? And so there needs to be a reversal and understanding of culture. I just did a presentation the other day about classical music and how the word classical means excellent. And so people identify that as European, and I'm always in meetings all the time speaking about, no, there's classical European, but classical Indian, classical African, classical Japanese, classical Native American, you know, so just redefining these words to kind of change the narrative in regards to how we see ourselves and see other cultures. So culture is very important. Culture is something that we are, and specifically culture as it relates to our heritage is very important. And I'm talking about all the lines, honoring all of our ancestors, the ones that are, you know, not the honorable Europeans included. I had to do some spiritual work, and the Sangoma was like, and your honorable European ancestors. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I need to say that. So honoring all that I come from, all that walk with me, that are of light and that are helping me, honoring all of that. And so when you deal with culture, it can fuse between now. People think that it's only from the past. It's now, too. We have hip-hop culture now that's new, is new on the earth. We never had it before. That we've created from our experience here. So, but when it relates to cultural activity that helps us stay in balance, that's what I'm really speaking about. And I think that that's something that we're missing, and that's a part of the, needs to be back on the table as it related to the self-hatred that we have claimed from our enslavement and throwing out the baby with the bathwater, that we need to return to some of those practices to keep us balanced that other cultures do. In Jewish culture, there's a bar mitzvah. In Japanese culture, there's people go to the Shinto shrine and they do their prayers daily. I'm in Japan. Yes. People are Christian, Buddhist, Shintoism, and they do, it's a part of their life. It's a part of what they do every day. So our culture now in America is very young and actually adolescent, actually. And we're really expressing some things that are really out of balance. And the world is looking at us. And so when we return to our indigenous cultures, that helps us to be more grounded and more balance in our humanness, and that's that's really needed right now. So I stop there and let the other one.
I think you're right there. And the other point is when you asked about whether culture was abstract, it's not abstract at all. Mm-hmm. I mean it is visible. It's
tangible.
It's edible. You know, it's all of that. And there is a value, and, you know, I guess in terms of PR, in terms of capitalism, in terms of the global economy, there is a sense that the European culture dominates. Well, I think that's part of marketing. However, you know, again, other cultures exist, and when we're hearing that it's a dominant culture, I think that what you have to realize is, when you look at a map of the world, Europe is the tip of Asia. You know, we've got to sort of reconfigure our references in terms of how we look at the world.
So let me interrupt, we never have enough time. This is a great conversation, and in a few moments, I want to invite you to call us. But before we go there, I do want to ask you, Baba.
Yes.
I want to ask you, do you think right now we are at the threat of facing cultural genocide?
The answer is yes. Very clearly, very boldly, we're looking at a situation of process or processes that have taken place not just when we landed here on these shores, whenever the big ships came, but also before we left the continent of Africa, our tableland. Now, we have a dynamic situation. Slavery has always occurred on every continent, everywhere. We know that to be a fact. So we can't, so we're not romancing this situation. But definitely, what has occurred here has been a process of breakdown consciously, not by some happenstance. We're looking at a series of something that have been put together that have really undermined a particular species of human being, of spiritual human being. Something wants to make us or keep us from being what the Almighty Creator intended for us to be. Clearly, by design, definition, acts, it is nothing contrived. I hope that I'm answering your question.
Yeah. So I want to say this because I want to open up the phone lines for callers to give us a call, and then I want to, as we're waiting for them to call in, I really want to ask Anne a question coming up. So if you're interested in having a question for the panelists or comments, please call 641-715-3660, extension 549-03. Then hit pound, then hit star 6 and 1 to connect. Again, 641-715-3660, extension 549-032, pound. Hit star 6 and 1 to call in and comment. So, Anne, I just asked Baba Ifashola about did he think that we were undergoing cultural genocide? And so I want to reread the definition of genocide that was stated earlier in the Genocide Convention, the International Genocide Convention. So, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. As such, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical, destruction in whole or in part. And there are two other points that they raised regarding the definition of genocide that I won't raise at this time. So my question to you, Anne, are we facing cultural genocide? And if we are, in your opinion, facing cultural genocide, should we be entitled to reparations? And so I want you to think about that too, Navasha, and you, Baba.
Yes.
Anne?
Based on that definition, I would say yes. But I would say that we are, and I know that we're dealing exclusively in this conversation with people of African descent. But I think that when you look at the Western Hemisphere and you look at the United States, that it is not that cultural genocide or genocide has occurred exclusively, in, according to that definition, upon African people. I think that it is a deliberate policy in the forming of this nation. I mean, I would not argue that according to that definition, yes, the enslavement, the injustice, the social practice, routinely and historically against Black people, African people, Native people, pretty much would adhere to genocide.
Okay, and so are we deserving of reparations?
Reparations, again, you know, part of that, and I always go back to this, is that we have to value people of African descent, Native Americans. We have to value ourselves. And if you don't, then you can't even begin, and it will be a negotiation. You know, nobody's going to give us anything, you know, and there's no way that we could be repaid for having created and built this nation. I mean, there's no way.
Thank you.
So we have to determine what is it that we value that we would want. I mean, you know, is it exclusively financial? I don't think so. Is it social service, health care, you know, do you get a coupon and you go and you figure out what you need the most and that's what you go for? You know, is it to say, you know, from this point on, for the next, until 2217, you know, is there an end date? You know, how do you repair? How do we repair the harm done already and in the process now? And I don't think, you know, that if we are looking for somebody to do reparations, that we can say that we just are sort of waiting for it to happen. You know, it's just, what do we value? So, what do we value?
So, Navasha, what do you think about reparations, and how would you define reparations? Are we entitled? And brought up, okay, is it an end to it? How can we repair something that has damaged our soul so intensely that it is difficult for us to even be remunerated or restored based on the atrocity that has happened to African people, not just here in the U.S., but across the globe? So, what are your thoughts about reparations, and what would that entail for you? If the U.S. said to us, yes, we're going to give you reparations, what would that be? Mm.
That's such a loaded question. I agree with Ms. Ann, what she said in regards to what we experienced in building the capital of this country cannot be repaid. Building family financial foundations for corporations and businesses cannot be paid. We were Wall Street. Our bodies were Wall Street. And there's so many layers and levels that would have to happen. You know how when you get a grant, there's a planning part of the grant before you get the money, before you, you know, proceed with the programming. There will be so many preliminary activities and actions that will need to happen in regards to an open door to acknowledging what has happened and how we built this country financially. Like, it would not be standing here alone without our sweat, blood, and sacrifice. We were the able to build this country. And so, that's a very, very, very difficult answer. It's almost like, you know, how to replace a mother or how to, you know, but I will say I have been having some thought about it since the report from the working group in regards to what that means, because we have different levels of mentalities with our people. And we have different levels of consciousness among our people.
Sure.
You imagine 150, I don't have an accurate count, but 150 million was taken from Africa, from different countries, different tribes, different ethnic groups, different values. And it's like saying, all y'all speak one language now. We don't. We don't speak one language even as a race in general, and because of different personalities. So it's a quite difficult thing to address. However, there could, you know, I feel that there needs to be some, I'm thinking about certain areas like education, free education, free healthcare, serious mental health, free mental health care in regards to what we've experienced. There's a lot of the things that we're seeing now are a product of what we experienced in the Great Maafa and us in the free labor that we provided this country. And with, you know, so, you know, a lot of things like tax relief, like so many things that we would need to have, but it has to be in a way that makes sense, because if you give somebody a whole lot of money, what if they own drugs? You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of a questionable thing in regards to reparations as it relates to money, because that was the first thought in the back in the day when I've heard about my elders, you know, requesting this and asking about it since the 40 acres and a mule situation. And we don't need 40 acres would be nice, but I don't know if we need a mule. Really cost. I'm just kidding. But, but, you know, in regards to just what we would require is so monumental. And I think the first step is just having a conversation to flesh out the ideas of what possibilities can be there, specifically since we have so many personalities at certain different levels of consciousness. So there's a lot of need. So I'm sure there's a lot of different opportunities and things that could be provided. Yeah. That we do deserve acknowledgement and something.
Well,
and I think what that is something that could be discussed.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. Do we have any callers that want to call and comment? Any callers? I just want to do a short break here because we only have about 15 minutes left in the show. And so I want to know if there are any callers that want to call in and comment. Please do so now.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
So, Stephanie, we don't have any callers that have any questions at this time. They're just listening.
Okay, so you let me know when we can go right back on, because we can continue the conversation.
Please continue the conversation.
Okay, thank you. All right. So, Baba Ifashola, you heard the comments that Navasha indicated, particularly, you know, she said a lot that stood out to me, but I like that statement about our bodies for Wall Street. So, what do you envision would be appropriate reparations for African people?
I believe we might be. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think we have a call coming in on the studio line.
Okay.
All right.
Area code 443. They just joined.
Let the call come in, and then we'll answer that question.
Okay. All right. Caller, could you go ahead and state your name and go ahead with your question or comment? Or did we lose one of the panelists and they were just calling back in?
Yeah, you did. You lost me. This is Navasha.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, bye-bye, Navasha.
So, yes. The issue has been for quite some time the issue of reparations. That's the tremendous question mark. As Navasha said, how are we going to look at this? How is it to, our greatest minds must be able to remove themselves from this experience in order to see the level of damage, spiritual, i.e. psychological, material, which is economic, educational, there's no way in the world that they could ever repay us. No way. How can they? So the amount of reprogramming that it would take for our people, and not just our people, for this whole society and for this world to be able to see the level of damage that has been created, like none other damage ever before on the planet. That's how massive this damage has been. So the issue is that, and they know it. So now the issue is, okay, so we're in the way. So are we to be swept under the rug some kind of way and hope that we just disappear? Well, no, because our ancestors are speaking loud and clear.
And what are they saying, Baba?
They are saying, we will not be swept under the rug. You are not going to take us out. No, we are here to stand with all of our glory, and our people are with us.
And how are they expressing that message?
They are expressing it in every aspect of our being. Our women are becoming more conscious of their hair. So little by little, people are wearing their natural hair. Yes, black is becoming proud again. Yes, naturals are becoming a statement. Both men and women are redefining themselves as a man and a woman in terms of how to deal with family, how to be supportive of one another. People are moving toward consciousness in spite of the charade that the greater society wants us to embrace, because that's all it is the charade. The issue is to mask as much as possible the programming that's constantly being handed down in terms of you can do what you want to do, say what you want to say, be what you want to be. No. The Creator has a particular plan for us all. What someone wants to do, yes. Mm-hmm.
No, continue.
Okay, so what the Creator wants to do is show us our true destiny, as opposed to this system wants to invent something that's not for us. That's not for us. So there's a direct hypocrisy, contradiction to the divine Creator, by whatever name ism you want to call. But the Creator does have a plan, and that plan is working, and it can't be denied.
We have 6 minutes left in the show, which means that each of you have about a minute and a half for closing comments. And to answer us, to tell us more about how people can contact you and to get involved with your project or your organization or just contact you, period. So I want to give Anne the stage first. I want to, Anne, if you could, in like a minute and a half, give your closing comments for the show and how people can get involved with the Middle Passage Ceremonies and Port Marcus Project.
Thank you. I want to agree with Fashola on some level, as we have worked over the last 5 years with this project. I see the ancestors surfacing. They are, you know, I call them our angels, and they are like opening doors, things that, when we approach communities now, there's an understanding the possibilities of recognizing, acknowledging this history, opening ourselves to the memory of our strength. I see it easier and easier. And I have to say that I think that that's the fact that we are, again, including ancestors in,
yes,
in our lives. And they are,
yes,
guides. They've lived. They know what has already happened. And, you know,
yes,
they will teach us if we,
yes,
will just, as I said, open our hearts. And for anyone who's interested in being involved in this effort, and we are, as I said, from New Hampshire to Texas, all along the coast, the arrival point, they can go to our website, which is www.middlepassageproject.org. We have a Facebook page, keeps you up to date. That's the Middle Passage Ceremony and Port Marcus Project. And if you want to email us, that's middlepassagemarkers@gmail.com. And we look forward to everyone participating in honoring our past and our ancestors. And thank you for this.
Sure. Thank you, Anne. Navasha,
yes,
your closing thoughts, and I want you to tell people about the upcoming documentary that the Youth Resiliency Institute is producing, specifically your husband, Fanon,
yes,
Hill, who has produced it. So can you share that in about a,
yes,
minute?
So Lamnava is an Ewe word, which means if you love me, you will come to me, from Togo, West Africa.
Mm.
That's where Ewe is from.
Yeah.
And the movie,
okay,
that, a documentary on our work that's coming out, is called Lamnava Love. It is an unflinching story of black families in inner city Baltimore harnessing their strengths to challenge the systems and institutions that will dictate their realities. And you can get more information about that and our organization at www.lamnavalove.com. LOMNAVALOVE.com, and you will see more insight, get more insight on our work as it relates to organizing, policy change, and even art to bring healing and social justice.
Thank you, Navasha. Mm. And last, Baba, closing words. You got about a minute.
Okay. I've been working for quite some time in healing spaces, dealing with color, light, texture, sound, because I recognize that the healing modalities are avenues in which our ancestors are flowing. They are using those modalities to rescue us if only we would pay attention, if only we would listen. It is important, yes, it is very vital, important for us to use all that we have in front of us. We've been given the tools. We have the tools to move forward. And it's not by others' design, but by the grace of the divine creator. So
thank you. Thank you. We only have a minute left, so I apologize for interrupting. I just don't want to get cut off, but I want to thank our panelists tonight for our talk.
Yes.
Show topic is culture as a human right. I'd like to thank Navasha Dea of the Youth Resiliency Institute and Chen of the Middle Passage Ceremonies and Port Markers Project and Baba Lawo, Ifashola, Imintola, Adeo Shun. Thank you all for an informative and rich discussion about culture as a human right. This is Stephanie Franklin, also known as Iyawo, Iyaloisha, Ifatayo, Iwinyemi, Adejo King. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you all have a very blessed weekend. Odaro!
Odaro!
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa! You all were great.
Okay, dear.
You all were great.
I couldn't have had a better fan.
Thank you.
It was good to have
you. Yes. Hey, Kushu.
Oh, mercy, 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 merc